Part 31, Chapter 6. Johnny, when he got into the compound, put Patty down and went looking for McKendrick. He found him in the hospital.
"Where's the epidemic?"
demanded McKendrick.
"I got your call in the middle of a medical lecture. I brought a whole medical team. And when I get here, I find you've taken off."
"This time, we're going to do it."
"Oh, you mean the capsules? Johnny, I've tried every way I can think of, and there's no getting in those skulls. Too much bone. I thought I showed you."
The doctor went over to where he'd last left the huge cyclo skull. He knocked his knuckles on it.
"It's just plain solid bone. The brain is clear down under the lower back plate. If I drill out enough bone to get to it, you'll just have a dead cyclo."
"Ah, you used the word drill. I didn't."
He walked over to the skull and picked it up, all 100 pounds of it. McKendrick had wired on the joints, and Johnny opened the jaw.
"Now, watch the ear bones."
He got a better grip and held it up to the light. An action something like juggling a medicine ball.
"Watch."
He opened the jaw again. The hinge, not the place a cyclo heard through, but the place where the ear bone met the back jawline, opened to show a hole about 1/32 of an inch in diameter.
"You showed me this once and explained you couldn't get an instrument through it. But it leads right to the spots where the capsules are embedded in the brain."
McKendrick was skeptical.
"Johnny, I got a whole team in there cleaning the place up for a possible operation. I thought something serious had occurred. But as it's no emergency, why don't we just get some sleep?"
Johnny took the skull over to the table they had used before for dissection and put it down.
"It may look like no emergency to you, but the truth is that we don't know how to make a cyclomotor, and we don't know how to work their math. If we don't know those things, we could come unstuck. We must have hundreds of planes right this minute that are inoperative. We need consumer products out in the planets, and the cyclomotors are tops. It's an emergency that'll do for now, but watch."
Johnny took a thin, insulated wire from his pocket and inserted it in the tiny skull hole. He took the other end of the wire and pushed it through the tiny hole on the other side.
"What are you doing?"
demanded McKendrick.
"Now, the question you must answer is, will these wires, pushed in, tear up any jaw or ear muscles?"
"Oh, they might hit some tissue, but the main muscles aren't there. That hole occurs because the jawbone, when extended to the extreme lower position, would have to leave a hole. Otherwise, there would have to be 2 additional bone plates. And Lord knows, there's enough already. I don't think..."
Johnny reached for the kit he had hastily packed. He drew out a molecular plating gun.
"This thing pours a stream of molecules from a rod onto a surface."
McKendrick was at sea.
"You can't get a gun like that in a head."
"The gun unit goes outside."
He dug out an electrical terminal plate.
"Where's one of those capsules we removed?"
McKendrick got one of the 2 half circles of bronze. Johnny snipped off some lengths of insulated wire. He took the molecular plating gun and connected a length to the electrode that ordinarily fed current to the rod of spray metal. Then he laid the other end on the bit of bronze. He took a 2nd piece of wire and laid it from the bronze to the electrical terminal plate. Then he connected the back of the terminal plate with a long wire to the current input terminal of the gun. He was simply going to substitute the bit of bronze for the gun's usual spray rod and then bypass the spraying component, but instead make the molecules flow on a wire to a receiving plate. And just to make sure electrolysis would occur, he was completing the circuit back to the gun. He pressed the trigger. The terminal plate began to be plated in bronze. A tiny hole appeared in the capsule taken from a cyclo head. No electrician, McKendrick said.
"It's disappearing."
"We're flowing the metal molecules up the wire to the plate. I think it's called electrolysis. We're just not letting the metal molecules spray. We're flowing them onto a plate."
He adjusted the wires to the bit of bronze so that an inflow hit a different spot and the outflow occurred from a new place. McKendrick gawped.
"That
piece of metal is disappearing.
It's reappearing over on the terminal plate, but that will be outside the head.
He picked up a new bit of wire and, with a small torch, melted the end of it round.
If we take the sharp point off, can you wiggle this wire in through that hinge hole, around the various nerves, and touch the bronze bit in the skull? And then do the same thing from the other side?
This was something McKendrick knew about. The corded nerves of a cyclo brain were easy to push around. The cortex, or covering of the brain, could probably be pierced in a couple of tiny places without much damage.
We'll see,
said McKendrick, giving up all thought of waiting for morning. The cyclo bodies were lying on two mine carts outside the door. Pierre seemed to have vanished. McKendrick called in two nurses and another doctor, and they wheeled the workman cyclo into the dissection room. It was about five times as much body as they were used to handling, but with everyone helping, they got it on a table.
It's probably still frozen inside.
No problem. You forgot we've been through this before. A couple of times I was all hopeful we could even operate.
He took a stack of microwave emanating pads and plopped them on either side of the head to thaw it out with a quick defreeze. The room seemed awfully populated. Mr. Tsung was giving Johnny a white coat and a pair of lensless glasses. Johnny wondered what they were for and put them in his pocket. He was about to order a repositioning of the body when the singing button started up. It sang. The medical team was startled and a bit shocked. The scene was macabre enough without somebody singing a doleful dirge. Johnny pushed the button at Mr. Tsung.
Get rid of this thing.
Pulling other bits out of his kit, Johnny got to work making a more easily handled setup. Dr. McKendrick was getting the metal analyzer they used for an X-ray machine in place. He put the head of the corpse on it and tuned the dials so that he had a sharp, clean picture of the bronze capsule. He was testing the jaws of the corpse to see if they were flexible and, finding they were, propped them open with a metal expansion tool. The other doctor was mopping up water that had run off the cadaver's head and was getting the lower wave emanation plate wet. A nurse leaned over to Johnny and whispered,
I don't think this little girl should be in here during all this.
Johnny turned, and there was Patty. She must have followed him in. She was looking with interest at the bleached skull. This was the first day in all these months he had seen Patty noticing her environment. He was not going to suppress her by telling her to get out.
Let her stay,
he whispered to the nurse. The woman was a bit disapproving, but she did not push it. Johnny had his rig ready. McKendrick was looking at some sketches he had made of cyclo brain nerves. He laid the drawings down, took the offered wires, and got to work. Watching the viewplate and checking the sketches, he began to work a blunted wire end in. He finally, with a few minor detours, got it to the embedded bronze. Then he got the other wire through to the other side of the metal. Johnny verified they were ready and threw the switch. The exterior terminal plate began to turn bronze. McKendrick worked very delicately, feeding in electricity to one side of the plate and taking it from the other. It was, looking at the viewplate, sort of like cleaning up a blot. The bronze in the skull became less and less. McKendrick steered the wires around. After about half an hour, he could find no further shadows or traces of the bronze in the skull. He carefully withdrew the wires.
Now to see if we've burned nerves,
he said. The team went into immediate action. They broke out aprons and gloves and a set of instruments, including a spinning disc bone saw. The nurse leaned over to Johnny again and whispered,
I do really think that little girl ought to go. This is too much for anyone that young. How old is she? 10?
Patty was sitting on a stool, overlooking the proceedings. She was very interested. Nothing could have made Johnny banish her.
Leave her alone,
he whispered back. They removed the viewers and put down pans and cloths. And in a moment, the bone saw was whining and screeching into the skull. Shortly, green blood began to flow, and the team mopped it up. McKendrick had done this so often that it seemed only minutes before they were looking at the place where the bronze had been. McKendrick mopped up a bit more blood and got out a glass and inspected the nerves.
The tiniest amount of burn.
I'll reduce the amperage,
said Johnny. He got busy installing a rheostat in the circuit. The team was throwing the bits of the dead cyclo back together. They heaved him off the table and back onto the mine cart and shoved him out in the hall. 2 minutes later, they had the former executive on the table. They repeated the molecular flow operation on the bronze and got rid of it. Johnny did a test on a silver capsule they already had from times past. McKendrick consulted his drawings again. The doctor pulled the wires back and fished them in again on the silver capsule in the cadaver's brain. It went along all right until they got to the fuse in it. It was so tiny and so quickly melted that it took quite some time to pick up all the bits. The wires, manipulated around, were more likely to touch each other than the scraps left. Eventually, that was gone too. Once more the gloves and saws, and presently the brain interior, mopped of green blood, was exposed. McKendrick went over it with the greatest attention. Then he stood up. McKendrick was looking at Johnny with awe. The lad had invented a new way to operate. McKendrick was thinking of the bullets and metal bits that could be removed with this, and without making huge incisions or holes. Electrolytic surgery.
It works on a corpse,
said Johnny. He glanced at his watch.
It's near midnight now. Tomorrow, let's see if it works on a live one.